Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone is having a wonderful week so far. A lot of stuff that I want to talk about on the podcast today. I'm going to be getting into and breaking down the recently released Fandango survey in regards to the summer movie season, kind of breaking down the surveyors that listed what their most anticipated films of the year were in regards to the summer movie season, and kind of get into what people might be looking forward to as we get into the months of May, June, July, and August. I'm also going to be getting into the weekend preview, kind of giving you guys a look into what's coming out this weekend, what to look forward to on streaming, and also in theaters as well. But the first thing that I do want to talk about today is something that actually happened yesterday, but it was a big enough finale to talk about, of course, and that is the season 3 finale for Star Wars is The Mandalorian, and it was titled The Return. And this was a finale that I was very much looking forward to. I really enjoyed season 3 overall for The Mandalorian. And by the way, this is going to be a non-spoiler review, so there won't be any details that are given in regards to what happened in yesterday's finale of this season. But overall, again, I was looking forward to what this finale was going to be. I liked what they were setting up, especially in the last episode, which was episode 7. And I think so far this season, I've really enjoyed. There's been some up and downs, but I was looking for them to finish strong. And so overall, what did I think of the finale? I thought it was just fine. I thought it was a fine way to end this very kind of roller coaster season. I think when you look at the rankings in terms of the 3 finales that have aired for The Mandalorian so far, I think this very much is my least favorite. That's not to say that it's awful, but I think in terms of what obviously the second season finale kind of brought, which was a great end at the moment to the Grogu Din storyline, and of course bringing in Luke Skywalker and that amazing moment that everybody loved. It was a huge surprise. Nobody saw it coming, and I think it obviously delivered on that front. Season 1, I thought, brought a really good conclusion to the first season and also teased some really cool things to look forward to. And I think what this finale did that it didn't really do well for me that the other finales did was that I think it was very much lacking in the stakes that it was providing. I think in terms of what it was leading up to and what it was providing, I didn't feel that the weight of everything against these shoulders. I didn't feel the stakes for the characters. I didn't feel like they were in any kind of danger. And I think some of the story elements felt a lot very rushed throughout this episode. I think whether you're talking about story details and moments that were just applied to season 3, or really some moments that you can really kind of say were arcs throughout the first 3 seasons of The Mandalorian, I think very much felt rushed. They didn't feel earned. And I just think they were lacking in that aspect. And I just didn't think they really kind of brought it well into that purview. I do have to say, however, though, I think the final 10 minutes, I loved what they were kind of setting up and where they kind of leave all these characters. I think even though I did have my ups and downs, I did like the way that it all kind of finished by the end. So the last 10 minutes really did work for me. I liked the fact that they kind of brought everything back a little bit to Din and Grogu's story with this one, because I know some people have felt this way. I've kind of felt it, especially in the back half of the season a little bit, where a lot of the focus has been kind of left to other characters, specifically like Bo-Katan, who I think when you talk about MVPs of the season, she definitely was amazing. I think this was a great kind of resurgence for Katie Sackhoff to bring this character to life, and after kind of being in a few sporadic episodes in season 2, she really comes to the forefront and is more as kind of a co-lead in this season, and it was great to see her do and interact and lead and do all these amazing things. But I do like the fact that they brought it back to Din and Grogu in this episode, and I felt like you wish they would spend a little bit more time with them in this season, but I like where their story ended up and where it was in this finale. But again, it was just lacking in some of those areas. I thought the stakes, or not just the stakes, but the action, I should say, not the stakes, but the action, I thought was awesome in this finale. I liked whether it was the hand-to-hand combat, there were some good aerial sequences that were really cool, so that was really awesome to see. And I just think overall, this finale is indicative to what the overall season can kind of be looked at, where again the finale had some great singular moments, but overall there wasn't just a lot of weight to it. And I think the season in and of itself felt like that, where I think you can look and choose singular episodes that were great. For me, the ones that come to mind, I think episode 3, episode 5, and episode 7 were the standouts of this season. I think it really encapsulated what makes The Mandalorian a great Star Wars show, and I think what makes people love this show and love these characters. But then you had some episodes, specifically episode 6 and maybe episode 4 and a few others, that were a little wobbly and didn't feel and have the tone and what you would expect from this show, and you kind of were asking yourselves what you were doing. And I think very much so that is the encapsulation of this entire season. I think looking at the season overall, I think it had a great first half. I thought those episodes 1 through 5 were amazing. Again, I think episodes 7 and 8 were very good. Episode 7 in particular was very good. And then episode 6 was kind of the outlier that just, you didn't know what it was doing in this season. And I think when you look at overall each of these 8 episodes, and you look back at seasons 1 and 2 of Mandalorian, I think very much so that this season felt like the show didn't know what it wanted to be. And I think it was juggling a lot of different things, whether it's setting up for the future, interacting with these other characters, interacting with, in terms of reclaiming Mandalore, or the Darksaber, and Bo-Katan, and Din, and all these different clans and factions of Mandalore. I think the show was trying to struggle with all these storylines that it set up for itself, while also maintaining the identity that it very much had within the first 2 seasons, which it was very much about a lone gunslinger who takes on a ward and the adventures that they kind of go on together, and weaving all that through the universe that is Star Wars, whether it's interacting with older characters that we know, like Luke and Ahsoka and Bo-Katan in season 2, and then setting itself up for new adventures in all these other worlds and kind of these lone singular missions within each episode that kind of tie itself together by the final 2 episodes of each season. I think this season was kind of struggling with all that, where it was trying to build out this world, build out these cultures, but still trying to focus on these singular adventures at the same time. And I think when we look back on this season and looking where they end season 3 and where they could go with the possibility of a season 4 of The Mandalorian, I think they were very much trying to, you could see it as kind of being a bridge to where they want the show to go back to a little bit. And I think this season had a lot of storylines that it was trying to juggle a little bit too much. And again, some of it worked, some of it didn't. And I just think it was, when you look back on season 3 in a couple years, I think you're going to very much look at it as trying to see of an identity struggle for what the show really wanted it to be. But again, I think it does deliver on being excited about the future of some of these characters, where they could go, whether it's new spinoff ideas or where we want to go with The Mandalorian from here on out. I still think it gets people very excited for what season 4 is going to be. And I, for one, cannot wait for season 4. I know it hasn't been officially greenlit yet, but Jon Favreau has talked about writing the scripts for season 4, so we know it is on the horizon. And even though the ratings for season 3 haven't been on the level of seasons 1 and 2, it's still a show that is very much in demand. It's very popular. You have popular characters. It's still a linchpin for the Star Wars universe right now, especially since the movies haven't really kind of kicked into another gear yet after The Rise of Skywalker. TV is still where Star Wars is living currently, and The Mandalorian is a huge part of that. So I don't think the show is done by any stretch of the imagination, and I think we're going to see a back to basics with season 4 of The Mandalorian. But overall, I think this was a very enjoyable season. Again, had great moments, great episodes, but I think overall it was very much a little bit of kind of a roller coaster going up and down, and coming off of the first 2 seasons, it's a little bit of a step back, and I know some people feel like it's a major one, but for me, if anything, it's again a little step backwards than forwards, but I still think there's a lot of great stuff to take away from this season, and I think when we look back on it, again, years from now, and what the other projects that are coming down the pipeline could lead from this season, I think it'll be looked back a little bit more fondly than it is right now for some people. But overall, I did enjoy the finale. Again, okay, not as good as the previous 2 finales for The Mandalorian, but still nonetheless had a lot of great storylines, a lot of great areas that they were able to end up in. And I think overall, this was a fine finale for season 3 of The Mandalorian. What did you guys think about season 3? Have you enjoyed it? Have you not enjoyed it? Did you enjoy the finale? Again, give your non-spoiler thoughts about this episode in the comment section. I'd love to know what you guys think about this season of The Mandalorian. Now to move on away from a galaxy far, far away and into the world of movie news. And the first thing that I want to discuss in the world of movie news and what's going on in Hollywood is to talk about a little film that is set to be coming out next year in March of 2024. And that is going to be the sequel to the smash hit that came out in 2021, which was Godzilla vs. Kong, which is now titled Godzilla and Kong, the New Empire. And this is going to be the sequel to a film that in the pandemic ages of 2021 did fairly well for itself, where it did well theatrically, it did well on HBO Max when it was one of the first kind of day and date releases in terms of what the strategy of HBO and HBO Max was at that time period, but it did well enough for itself on both fronts that it warranted Warner Brothers and Legendary to work with each other once again to bring more of these MonsterVerse films to the big screen. And instead of kind of doing the MCU route where you have a big team up and then you kind of go back to another solo Kong film or another solo Godzilla film, I think it's a smart route that they're basically saying, you know what, people love seeing Godzilla and Kong on the screen together, let's just go into another sequel with those two together. And that's exactly what is happening in this film. It's being directed once again by Adam Wingard, who did Godzilla vs. Kong, and it also returns some of the actors who were in that film, specifically Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyree Henry are returning for this film. And then you have some newcomers, specifically the one who's going to be leading this film in Dan Stevens, who you might know from Legions, from Downton Abbey. He was also in Beauty and the Beast. He played the Beast in the Disney live action retelling that was done in 2017. So he's somebody that has been in the big blockbuster moniker for a little bit, so he knows how to be in these kinds of films. And along with all these new details were also some new story plot and some new story details that came along with all this information as well. And apparently, according to the synopsis for Godzilla Kong New Empire, these are the details that are coming out about the film. This latest entry follows up the explosive showdown of Godzilla versus Kong with an all-new cinematic adventure pitting the almighty Kong and the fearsome Godzilla against a colossal undiscovered threat hidden within in our world, challenging their very existence and our own. The epic new film will deliver further into the history of these titans, their origins, and the mystery of Skull Island and beyond, while uncovering the mythic battle that helped forge these extraordinary beings and tied them into humankind forever. And that is the basic synopsis that comes out of the initial details for Godzilla and Kong New Empire. And again, I'm somebody who really enjoyed Kong vs. Godzilla when it came out. It wasn't anything new. It didn't set a new precedent for anything. It was just fun, incredible monsters fighting each other in the landscapes of Tokyo or on the seas of these military cruisers, blowing crap up, wrecking cities, and just annihilating everything in its path while fighting each other. And that's what I think people really loved about that that Godzilla vs. Kong film. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see in this film, now that they're not pitted against each other, how do they work well together? And how do you establish this new kind of bond between the two of them while taking on a new force and new entity and kind of exploring these mythos? And the big question going into this kind of film is, are you really going to be exploring all these different things, or is it just going to be you focus on certain things here and there, but it's really about the action? And so I think that's a big question going into this movie, but I've really enjoyed what I've seen from the MonsterVerse so far. I loved these solo films that came out, especially the first Godzilla film and Kong Skull Island. I thought were really good, solid monster films, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what these two can do on the big screen once again together. And I think March is a really smart day for this film to come out on. It came out in March of 2021. It did fairly well for itself in that release window. And especially now that the pandemic is mostly kind of washed away for the most part and people are going back to theaters, if it did well for itself in 2021, where you still have COVID running rampant, people were still kind of hesitant to go back to movies, but people did go to watch this film if they felt safe enough to do so, with all the guidelines, restrictions kind of gone away and people comfortable going back to the theaters, back to doing activities again, how is this film going to do now? Is it going to be bigger? Could this be maybe a $1 billion film? Could this do better than Godzilla versus Kong? So I think all of those are into play for this movie. and you still have this franchise that's kind of being built out where you have this film coming out, but then you also have the Apple TV Plus series that's going to be dealing with kind of the organization behind all of these titans with, I believe it's called Muto, and that's going to be an Apple TV Plus series that's going to be dealing with Godzilla and some of those monsters. So they're kind of trying to build out this universe, but I like the fact that they're sticking with the fact that we're not going to be going out and making solo films with these characters right now. We're going to keep them together, and I think that's a smart way of going about and following up Godzilla versus Kong. So I'm excited to see where this film leads. I'm excited to see a trailer for it when it does come out on March 15th. So we'll probably get one probably towards the tail end of the summer into the fall time and kind of ramp up to getting people excited for what's coming out in 2024. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this film. I like the details, and we'll see where this one goes next year. What do you guys think about this new result for the new film Godzilla Kong, A New Empire? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And the next thing that I want to talk about on the podcast is going to kind of take up a lot of the time here on the show, and that is going into the summer movie season Fandango survey. And basically every year, Fandango usually puts out kind of their list after surveying thousands of people into what they think is their most anticipated films going into the summer movie season. They also do polls on like what their favorite family films are, what their most anticipated family films are, most anticipated action films, most anticipated stars are looking forward to. So more details will probably come out about this in the coming weeks leading up to the summer movie season. But initially, they just kind of come out and give a basic gist of what people are looking forward to. And according to this year's survey that Fandango did, they looked at and tallied around 6,000 people, in which 86% of moviegoers apparently plan to see more movies on the big screen this summer compared to last year. And apparently, according to Fandango, also of those surveyed, more than 81% plan to see three or more movies in theaters, and that even a higher percentage, around 89%, are excited at the prospect that more movies will be made available to see in theaters this year than they have in recent memory. And this is going to be a preview per se of the summer movie season, but just kind of looking at it overall, I think looking at everything going on this summer, this is going to be the biggest test for the movie industry coming out of that pandemic. I think summer of 2022 was a great appetizer to what we could expect this year, where you had big blockbusters that did very, very well, from Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness to Top Gun Maverick, obviously, to Elvis kind of being a good counter programming for adults that did surprisingly well, grossing over $300 million at the box office. Then you had films like Thor Love and Thunder do very, very well. Minions the Rise of Gru did very well for animated family fare. So it was a good little taste of what could happen if you had more films coming out that were able to take up multiple weekends, or instead of every couple of weekends, every other weekend, you have a new major release coming out. And that's exactly what we have coming this summer, from, again, the June window, where you have films like Elemental, you have The Flash and Indiana Jones, and then in July you have Barbie, Oppenheimer, Mission Impossible, to May with The Little Mermaid, Guardians of the Galaxy, Fast 10. There's a whole lot of franchise films to really look forward to that you could look at and say, this is the true test that Hollywood, the theatrical landscape, really, really need to kind of kick themselves back into gear. And so far within 2023, when you look at the first couple of months, specifically March and April, they've done a very good job of sustaining themselves and getting people back to the theaters. And the box office has been pretty healthy, especially looking at a comparison from year to year, from 22 to 23. There's been a spike and a percentage jump in people that have gone to the movies, and in the box office revenue of people that have gone to the theaters in the last couple of months, really. And so it's going to be very interesting to see where some of these films land. And then when you look at these lists of films, I also think it's great to kind of look at and see what people are looking forward to. Now, again, this is only a list of 6,000 people. There's still a lot of people in the United States, in the world, billions of people. So this is only a slight pie, a sliver of pie into what people might be looking forward to, but it is a good window into what people are actually looking and anticipating to see coming this summer season. And so they listed 15 films on the list that people are very much anticipating, and going through the list, going from 15 to 1, coming in at number 15 is Gran Turismo, which is directed by Neil Blomkamp. It's starring David Harbour and Orlando Bloom. It's coming out August 11th. It's based off of the video game Gran Turismo, and of course video games have been having quite a big year so far between The Last of Us on TV and of course Super Mario Brothers just annihilating the box office in the last couple of weekends. So this could be a little film that could break out come August 11th. So that's one that is at number 15. Now, at number 14 is the Wes Anderson film Asteroid City, which is coming out on June 16th. So it's kind of cool to see some indie films or director of the caliber of Wes Anderson, who very much has a kind of niche audience, but it seems like people who were tallied in the survey really like Wes Anderson and are very much looking forward to seeing this film, which is how it ended up at number 14. At number 13 is the sequel to the surprising little summer film that came out in 2018, The Meg, with The Meg 2, The Trench, which stars Jason Statham once again. That is coming out this August as well. And then coming at number 12 is Insidious, The Red Door, which is releasing on July 17th. And then coming at number 11 is the final Indiana Jones film that is going to star Harrison Ford. And that, of course, is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, coming out on June 30th. It's going to be making its world premiere at the Cannes Film Festival a month earlier, in May, which is only a few weeks away, which is kind of crazy. The trailers for it have looked amazing so far, so it does not surprise me that Indiana Jones is on this list. Maybe a little surprising it's not in the top 10. It's out of the top 10, but still, it makes sense that it is on this list. I think people are very much looking forward to that film, and I think it's going to do very well for itself when it comes out in the late June quarter. Then coming in at number 10 is the new animated film for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which is produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg and their production company. It is coming out on August 4th. Then coming out at number 9 is the Disney film set to hit on July this month, which is Haunted Mansion, which is coming out July 28th. And then coming out both in number 8 and 7, which is kind of funny since they're both coming out on the same day in the same weekend. It's the matchup we're all looking forward to. And that, of course, is Oppenheimer and Barbie. Oppenheimer coming in at number 8, Barbie at number 7. It's kind of cool to see they're still attached to the hip. There's no way these two are able to pull away from one another. They're just attached to one another. And I think it's pretty fascinating to see that. And so number 8, number 7 is Oppenheimer and Barbie. Coming in at number 6 is Fast 10, which is again releasing on May 19th. And then you also have coming in at number 5 is the Disney live action retelling of their animated classic in The Little Mermaid, which is starring Halle Bailey and Melissa McCarthy, directed by Rob Marshall. That is making its way on Memorial Day weekend, specifically May 26th. And then coming out at number 4, which to me is a little surprising given the state of this franchise right now. It's taken a break between 2018 and now, and then especially in terms of main films, and I just kind of gave it away. It's Transformers Rise of the Beast. I'm a little surprised because we haven't gotten a true Transformers film since The Last Knight when it came out in June, July of 2017, and to me that is a garbage film. It is awful. So I don't know the state of the franchise, how it is right now. The trailers look okay, but it seems like in the poll and the survey that Fandango did, the amount of people that surveyed on this list, they are very excited to see Transformers Rise of the Beast. So it's cool to see that it's on this list this far up, but it is a little surprising for me. Not so surprising is what is coming in at number 3, which is The Flash, which it has its release date set for June 16th, which again, to me, it's one of my most anticipated films of this year. It's probably, again, I'll have to look at the list again, but it's probably going to be my most anticipated film of the summer movie season. I'm just looking forward to this one because of the fact that we don't know what the DC universe is going to look like after this film. It's supposed to be the one that sets up a new timeline. We have Michael Keaton coming back as Batman. We have Sasha Calle coming in as Supergirl. everything going on with Ezra Miller in this film, off the screen, of course, with all the antics he's been or that they have been dealing with. It's all kind of going to come to a head when this film comes out on June 16th. And in just a week or so, it's going to have its first screening at CinemaCon. So Warner Brothers feels very confident in this film. I do think it's going to be a huge box office success. And it just reassures me even more of that when I see it on number three on this list. Coming in at number two is the new Tom Cruise film coming out this summer. Not another Top Gun film, but it is the other film in his other big franchise, of course, and that is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which is coming out on July 14th, a week before Barbie and Oppenheimer are set to face off on July 21st. So Mission Impossible holding a release date in July, and I'm excited to see more from this film. We've been hearing rumblings about it. We've seen Tom Cruise, whether it's do that amazing stunt off the cliff or set photos we've seen of what he's been able to do on certain planes, whether it's for this film or for part two coming out next year. There's a lot of anticipation for this film, and I think a big question going into this one is going to be, can this movie make over $1 billion? And is it, and that can be attributed to that Mission Impossible is a beloved action franchise right now, and also because of the fact of the success of Top Gun Maverick, and that attributing that to Tom Cruise right now, who's having kind of a little bit of a huge wave, a little bit of people really clamoring to see more from Tom Cruise right now. And so I think his name is going to carry this film as well, and so that could, all those aspects could very much well help this film hit that $1 billion mark. Not that it's a guarantee that it's going to happen, but I could very well see it joining the $1 billion club this year. And seeing it at number two gives me a little bit more confidence that, again, in the survey that Fandango did, that the 6,000 people, a bunch of them agreed that Mission Impossible is very much one that they're looking forward to, and why it ended up on number two on this list. And the one that surprises me just as much as Transformers did coming in at number four, and the reason it surprises me is that I expected it to be probably in the top five, but not in number one. And I think it speaks loudly to the fan base the original film cultivated back in 2018, and that, of course, coming in at number one is the sequel to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and that is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which will be releasing on June 2nd of this year. And I think when you look at why this film is probably attributed to being number one on this list, I think very much so the reason for that could be is because of the reaction this film got, not because of its theater run, which it did so at the box office, but once it hit Netflix right after that, it, I think, cultivated a big following, whether it was because of the character of Miles Morales or just because it's a great film, the soundtrack. I think there's a big following behind this character, this universe right now, and I think you're going to see that translate very well for itself at the box office come June 2nd. So I'm really happy to see Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse get in on this list, specifically at number one, because I think it deserves it. Their first film is amazing, and if there's any indication based off the trailers, the previews that have come out for this film so far, I think we're in for a real good treat for this June 2nd when the sequel comes out on that date, and it is number one on this list. So those are the 15 films that Fandango says that most people are anticipating based off of the survey that they did. And to kind of take away some of the things from that list, some of the things that were kind of omitted, I think the big one that people are going to be asking about, and I asked myself this when I first saw the list, is where's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3? And I think Fandango did a really good job of making sure they reiterated and iterated and explained that the poll is based off of films that are coming out leading into Memorial Day weekend, which is why films like Fast 10 are able to be on the list and Guardians is not, because Guardians is coming out on May 5th. So it's not able to make that list. But Fandango did say that when it looked at their most anticipated films of 2023, when they did that survey back at the beginning of the year, Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was the most anticipated film that people were looking forward to based on the survey that they did. So don't read into the fact that Guardians is not on this list. I think people are very much looking forward to that film, and it's going to do very well for itself when it kicks it all off on May 5th. But the other two films, one that does concern me a little bit more than the other one that was kind of omitted from this list, the one that doesn't cause a lot of concern for me, it's because it's more of a fresher character that nobody really knows, and that comes in the DC Universe, which is coming out this August, and that is Blue Beetle. And I think Blue Beetle had a really good trailer that came out a few weeks ago, but it's a it's a character that not a lot of people know. And all due respect to Sholo Gomez and Sholo Muerta, who of course is in plays Miguel in Cobra Kai, he's not that well known of a name. I'm hoping after Blue Beetle he becomes more well known of a name, that he gets bigger projects and people follow him a little bit more. But it's not a big character, it's not a big actor taking on the leading role. But again, I'm hoping, based off of the trailer, I'm hoping that this film does a little bit of a surprise breakout and does surprisingly well for itself in that August quarter, because there's not really a whole lot of stuff coming out this August, and I think it's up for anybody to kind of surprise and have a surprise successful run at the box office this summer. So I think that's one film that's not as worrying to me. I just think that, again, it's just not a well-known character, but again, hopefully it becomes well-known when it comes out. The one that really concerns me, though, that it's not on this list, and the fact that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is an animated film and it ended up on the number one spot, and Haunted Mansion, which is a Disney film, ended up at the 9th spot, but none of these, not this film did. And it's a film that is a company that is a staple in the summer movie season, and that of course is Disney and Pixar's Elemental. Usually, whenever I see these lists, the Pixar film is usually on there. It's in that kind of top 10 arena for being one of the most anticipated films that people are looking forward to. And again, the fact that Spider-Man made this list and it's number one and it's an animated film gives me very much cause to pause about the state of Elemental. And it's been getting some good buzz. It's supposed to close out the Cannes Film Festival this year. And it seems like it's getting back to the traditional Pixar that we love, where it's original, new characters, ideas, worlds, all that fun stuff. But the big question I think is going to happen once this film comes out, on the heels of something like a Lightyear, which did not do well at the box office, what is the state of Pixar right now? Has Pixar unfortunately become a thing where you anticipate those films coming out on Disney Plus before going to theaters? Or is it just that people aren't interested in these Pixar movies? And so I'm hoping that it's more of the case that maybe people just don't know about this film, and maybe once they hear really good buzz about it and that it is a Pixar film, that puts more goodwill back into the studio and with the audience, and that they want to go see this film, and that it does surprisingly well for itself and becomes the kind of summer blockbuster that we know Pixar knows how to pull off, because they usually always come around that slot, that June 16th, that middle of the June slot, where they usually have the film that they know can do very well, both critically and commercially. And I think Elemental has all those facets going for it. It just surprises me that some of these other films made this top 15, top 10 list, but Elemental was not one of those films. Not even come outside of the top 10 is surprising for me. And so maybe the marketing is going to have to ratchet up a little bit more. Maybe there's not a lot of built-in awareness for this film. So I'm hoping this is just the case of these individuals just didn't know about the film, weren't interested, and it doesn't speak to the truth and to the fact that maybe people just don't want to see this film. I don't know what it is, but I'm hoping that does not turn out to be the case for this movie. So those are really the things that stood out to me about not being on the list. When it comes to everything else on the list, though, I really do enjoy it. There were some surprises in there that did make kind of their certain positions that I was kind of surprised by, Transformers kind of being one of them. But overall, what do you guys think about this summer movie season survey list? Let me know what you think about it down below and leave your thoughts. And the final bit of movie news that I want to talk about on the podcast today is kind of just what we just talked about a little bit, specifically about one film that is coming up this summer movie season and is coming out earlier in the season, specifically on May 19th, and that, of course, is the 10th installment in the Fast and Furious franchise, which is labeled Fast 10, or if you want to go by its alphabetical look, Fast X maybe, but I go by the fact that it's numerical and it's the Roman numerals, and that is going to be that it is Fast 10. That's how I'm going by it, but some people call it Fast X, some people call it Fast 10. Either way, it is the 10th installment in this lucrative franchise that has just reached unprecedented levels. It is directed by Louis Leterrier. It stars in insane A-list cast and includes Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Tyrese Gibson, Ludacris, Jason Momoa coming in as the villain, Natalie Emmanuel's coming back, Jordana Brewster, John Cena, Jason Statham, Sung Kang, you have Brie Larson, Alan Richardson. I could go on and on and on for who's also in this film, but the reason that I want to talk about it right now is because there is a brand new trailer for the film that released yesterday. And looking at this film, I'm somebody who loves the Fast and Furious franchise. The last two movies have been okay for me, but I feel like some of that magic has kind of left the franchise that was very much a part of that kind of initial run between Fast 5, Fast 6, and Fast 7. And then unfortunately, it's just kind of lagged a little bit since then, just a tad bit. But looking at this trailer, I'm feeling that kind of magic kind of reinvigorated back into this franchise. Now, I would have loved to see Justin Lin continue on and make these films, but there was a falling out there, it seems like, and they brought in a new director who kind of picked the baton right back up and delivered this film, and that's Louis Leterrier, and it seems like he just is keeping the momentum going on this film. The action looks insane. The family dynamics look awesome. The one thing that has stuck out to me in both trailers is just how much fun it seems like Jason Momoa is having as the villain. And I can't wait to see the kind of eccentric, over-the-top villain that he delivers, because it feels like, at least from the trailers, he's not going over a line, but he is over the top, but he's at the same time menacing, and you wouldn't want to mess with him. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table in terms of the villain pantheon that they have within this franchise. And it's great to see newcomers like Brie Larson be in this film, and seeing Charlize and Michelle Rodriguez go at it is awesome to see. The action looks insane. The car chases look just incredible. The globe-trotting that Fast and Furious is now associated with is back in this one. So I think if it's able to deliver on all those fronts, I think this film is going to do very, very well for itself. It's still, I think, a strong international brand, especially when the ninth film came out in 2021. It was kind of one of the first big blockbusters to kind of come back again into theaters in that May 2021 slot, when others like A Quiet Place were doing it as well. And that was one that actually also did well for itself. Not billion-dollar success like the previous films did, but and because of the state that it was in, the world, especially internationally, it did very, very well. And so I think this is still a franchise that maybe doesn't resonate as much here in the domestic markets, but I think internationally, because of its diverse cast, its diverse locations that they go to, it still holds really strong. And I think that is what's going to carry this film going into the days of the summer movie season, when we have these other big films coming out that it's going to be jockeying against as you get into May and July. So I think the trailers have done very well for themselves, and I think it's no shock that they also announced yesterday that Louis Leterrier is going to be coming back to direct the final main installment in the Fast and Furious franchise, which will be Fast 11. That's not the official title, that's just what I'm calling it, but the fact that they're bringing him back, I think, shows that he had a good rapport with everyone working on there, especially Vin Diesel, and they want to bring him back to finish it. I think it's smart that it seems like you want to, usually these finales end up in two parts, and it seems like this is part one of a kind of a part two slow build-up finale for this franchise, so it makes sense that you want to keep that consistency going with your helmer on set, and it makes sense that you would want to bring him back to finish it all off, especially since I'm sure a lot of these characters will be popping up again in that final installment. So overall, I really like what the trailers have showed us so far. It's action-packed, it's incredible, and I'm excited to see what the stakes are going to be for this film. Will we actually get people dying in this one, or will it kind of be more fake-outs? We'll have to wait and see, but the trailers have gotten me very excited to see this one in theaters when it hits on May 19th. What did you guys think about the latest trailer for Fast and Furious 10? They also came out some really cool character posters that if you want to check out, they're also on their social media sites as well. So the marketing is very much picking up for this film, and before you know it, it'll be here on May 19th. Now to move on to the final thing on the podcast, solutions, before we wrap up here, and that, of course, is going over the weekend preview. And because Super Mario Brothers is still just dominating the field for four quadrant entertainment, and there's not a lot of big blockbusters coming out, this weekend is once again more April counter programming for the big blockbuster that has kind of taken over the theaters, and that, of course, are a few really good ones that I think you should probably check out this weekend. So the first one that I'm going to get into is more in the horror line, and if there is one genre out of many others over the last couple years that have done very well for themselves in theaters, that would have to be the horror franchise. I mean, Deadline just put out a report that recently Smile is the most profitable original film from 2022. Again, totally new, not based off of anything, and that film did very, very well for itself because of its horror elements. And horror fans will ride or die with these films no matter what. And the thing about Evil Dead is that it is very much a established, built-in franchise that has its followers. And it's a kind of cult franchise that people love for what it does. And it seems like it's more the same for this film. For me, I'm not going to be going to see this film, but just going off of the trailers and everything that I've seen, thinking of horror fans, if you're looking for just kind of an exhilarating, creepy, crazy time, it seems like Evil Dead delivers on just that. It is the fifth installment in this franchise overall. So I think if you're looking for a fun horror time to go see, and something like Scream 6 is already out in theaters since it's been out for well over a month at this point, then it seems like this is definitely the one to go and check out this weekend in theaters. The one that I'm actually really excited to see this weekend, and I'm going to try to go see it as fast as I possibly can, that is the new Guy Ritchie film, The Covenant, and it stars Jake Gyllenhaal, and it basically is Guy Ritchie's kind of own take on a war film, and it's about this soldier who goes back into the war zone after being saved by the interpreter that was assigned to his unit. So he feels a kind of a moral sense and obligation to go back in and save his family from the Taliban. And when I first saw the trailers for this film, I couldn't actually believe that it was a Guy Ritchie film. And I think the reason they put in alongside the name The Covenant is that it's Guy Ritchie's Covenant, The Covenant, is because if you know the style of Guy Ritchie's films that he's written and directed, he has a kind of very fast style that he always goes with his movies, and they're kind of quick-witted in their dialogue. But when you watch a film like this, you obviously can't go that route with a war film. And it seems like Guy Ritchie was basically like saying to himself, forget everything that I know about my own style. I'm going to be going a completely 180 or really 360 direction and make a gritty, realistic war film. And that's exactly what it seems like this film is delivering on. So far, the reviews have been very, very well for this film. So I'm excited to go see it. It's got Jake Gyllenhaal in it, and to me, that's enough of a marketing to get me into the theaters by myself, because I'm a huge Jake Gyllenhaal fan. I think he's one of our great actors of our time right now. He's completely underwhelmed, or not underwhelmed, but he's completely underappreciated on especially the awards circuit, and the acclaim that I feel like he doesn't always get when it comes to awards bodies and whatnot. And I feel like we don't give him the love and the praise that we should. And I just think he is a great actor. And usually when he picks a project, he knows, when you see him on a film, you know that he picks good projects, and he knows the kind of films that he's going to feel challenged on. He's going to deliver something really good on, and that everything around him is going to click as well. And it seems like that is what delivered with The Covenant. So I'm really excited to see this movie, and it's the one for me personally, if I were to kind of detail all the ones that I'm looking at right now, that's the one that I would put my gold star on and say that's the one to go see in theaters this weekend above everything else. If you've seen Super Mario Brothers, if you've seen all these other films that have come out in recent weeks, that's the one to go check out this weekend in my eyes per se. The other one that isn't kind of, it's not kind of so much coming out this weekend, it's kind of expanding to a more widened horizon, and that of course is a new Ari Aster film, and that is Bo is Afraid, which is expanding to multiple markets after just kind of being in four select theaters both in LA and New York over the last weekend. And it did very well for itself. It was the highest per theater average of the year in terms of 2023, in terms of the theaters, the money that theaters make per show. It did very well for itself, and it's also the fact that it's the second or the biggest one since for A24 since Uncut Gems did it back in 2019. So there was a little bit of curiosity to this film. The big question is expanding out into multiple different markets, into hundreds and thousands of new theaters. How is this film going to fare? Is it gonna stumble and not even make the top 10 this weekend? It's gonna be very curious to see. But this isn't a box office preview. This is of course a weekend preview. And looking at the film overall, it is one that is very much mixed. And I talked about it on the box office recap a few days ago, where this film is very much people are interested to go see it because of all the crazy reviews that it's been getting, whether you're on the whole both ends of the spectrum where people think it's a hot flaming pile of garbage, some people think it's a masterpiece, and then there's actual legitimate people in the middle who like certain aspects of the film but might not like some others. It's a long runtime for this film. And when I watched the trailers, it definitely seemed like something so obscure and different than what Ari Aster has done in his first two films with Hereditary and Midsommar. So this is a movie that I'm really looking forward to because, A, I really like I really like what Ari Aster does. Midsommar was one of my favorite films of 2019 when that film came out. It was in my top 10, so I really adored what that film did. Not a usually big horror fan, but the way he delivered on the style of horror worked well for me. And it's also got an A-list legend star in my eyes with Joaquin Phoenix. And anything Joaquin does, I will go see. And it seems like he's taking on multiple different roles with this film. And I'm excited to see what he's able to deliver. So for me, Beau is Afraid, if you're kind of an indie niche guy who's looking for something interesting to go see, I don't think it gets more interesting than checking out Beau is Afraid. And then the other main theatrical release coming out this weekend is one that is going to be flying a little more under the radar, premiered at the Toronto Film Festival last year, and that is the film Chevalier, which stars Kelvin Harrison Jr., Samara Weaving. It's about this kind of violinist during that kind of Victorian Renaissance era in Europe, London specifically, that kind of detailing this rise of this man who is a black man, and it looks very interesting. It kind of has like a modern day anthem to it in a bit from what I've seen from the trailers. I really like it. Seems like some of the performances have done really well. So if you're looking for kind of more of a biopic to go check out this weekend, it seems like Chevalier might be the one to go see. And then on the streaming side of things, if you're looking to stay home, staying with the family or staying with a significant one or hang out with friends and watch a movie, the one that I would recommend, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't heard any really reviews on it, but it's got A-list stars or big name stars that you want to go check out. And that, of course, is for the movie Ghosted, which is directed by Dexter Fletcher, who you've seen Rocketman. That was a film that he did a couple years ago. And then it stars the dynamic duo of Ana de Armas and Chris Evans, who reunite after being in films such as Knives Out, the first one, and also in last year's The Gray Man, which was directed by the Russo brothers and had the leading man there in Ryan Gosling. So it has these two reuniting once again together. It's got this kind of fun spy element to it where it's about Chris Evans' character who meets a girl in Ana de Armas. And it's kind of a flip on that kind of spy comedy where it's usually the girl finds out the guy is the spy, that their significant other's a spy. And this one's a little bit flipped where the guy gets ghosted by the girl, wonders what happened, thinks they clicked off, and the guy goes to search for the girl. And the girl turns out to be this world-renowned spy, and they get onto all these kind of hijinks together. So I like the kind of twist that they do on that angle. And again, the chemistry between the two of them is, I think, why you would want to watch this film. And from what Chris Evans has kind of teased in the kind of press release and rollout for this film is that there could be some interesting cameos in this movie from some of his MCU counterparts that he's remained very well in touch in over these years since he's stopped playing Captain America after Avengers Endgame. So that's a reason to get excited for this one. But I think it looks like a fun, enjoyable film that Apple TV Plus put a lot of money in. I think if this was a film that was supposed to come out either later this year or next year, I think because of the budget, the stars involved, and what Apple and Amazon are doing now in terms of really gearing their films toward more theatrical first releases and then streaming, I think this would have been one of those films that it would have gotten a wide release in theaters and then gotten a kind of a downplay release to its streaming service. But right now, I think they're sticking with the strategy of putting this strictly on streaming. So if you're looking for something to watch that's not on Netflix, not on Amazon or Disney, or you know, like anything that's out in theaters right now, Apple TV Plus has something definitely to watch this weekend in Ghosted. But those are the films that I would recommend seeing this weekend. Again, Evil Dead Rise, Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, which is my personal pick to go check out this weekend, Beau's Afraid, Chevalier, and then on Apple TV Plus, Ghosted. So what do you guys think about this weekend crop of films? Is there one that you're looking more forward to seeing than another? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And with that down and out of the way, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in onto the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions, and be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source to see what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the Podcast Solutions, such as Wrestle Aggie Radio, Fretzelmania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at Real Ambiguous, And if you want to check out Canopy Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. Find me on Twitter at Bissell Samuel. That's BUSSELLSAMUEL. And also on Facebook at Sam Bissell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, keep on screening.